The Lifeboat Hour with Michael Rupert, Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Mike Rupert, I'm back again with you for one more week. This show tonight is a very special one for me. I'm going to talk about a lot of stuff that's been deeply personal with me for a long time. I'm going to talk about, what's going on in the world. But tonight I'm talking to the people who have been with me for a long time. I'm talking 10 to 13 years. I'm talking back since the late 1980s and throughout 92 and on. Because I'm going to use some names tonight, and I'm not going to have a lot of time to go back and explain to everybody who they are, but I think you're going to figure this out as I go through this. I got a lot on my mind tonight, and there's a lot of things going on. All right, so last week we had Dmitry Orlov. I love Dmitry. We had the largest audience we've ever had in the history of the show last week. Dmitry and I spent a fair amount of time talking about Russia, and one of the beautiful things that he said about Russia was that he believes that Russians have a better chance of survival because they care less, or they are capable of caring less, because the less you care about, he said, the easier it is to survive, and from an emotional standpoint, that's absolutely true. But we continued that conversation for a while. And I wanted to share this last week. We ran out of time, but it's an important story. I went to Russia in 2001. I was invited to an economic conference by the Ministry of Finance at the Bor Presidential Hotel and Retreat. And after I did the conference, I had like 5 days in Moscow. I mean, I'm so lucky. I've been to 13 countries in my life, all of them since I turned 50, no less. But I had like 4 days in Moscow to be a tourist, and my family had connection there. My mother had worked on a lot of Russian stuff at the Army Security Agency and NSA. But the Russians have a museum to World War II, which they call the Great Patriotic War. 22 million Soviet citizens were killed in that war, as opposed to just a little under, I believe, 900,000 Americans. That's a huge difference. Now, in incorporating Dmitry's viewpoint, which is absolutely true, and one of the reasons why I like the Russians, but the reason why I'm like taken by Russian culture is that in this museum to World War II, which is huge, and it's all underground. It's about 3 acres, 4 acres, I don't know, underground. And they have display cases after display cases, and it's just the most amazing reliquary from World War II. And you walk down into this basement, and when the person giving the tour stops, you realize that you're standing under a roof that's 3 acres, and there's no major walls. There's just corridors of display cases that are, you know, like a library. And you see this incredible ceiling covering the whole museum. And from it, on 22 million chains are suspended 22 million teardrop-shaped crystals. Even though the Russians may have the ability to care less about things in their art, they show that they have distilled something out of that, which is very nice. And so with that in mind, Vladimir Putin has won re-election in Russia. He was crying, and there's a couple of positive signs here. Number one is, over the last 3 or 4 days, we've had stories on the World News Desk at CollapseNet showing that Vladimir Putin is starting to crack down on the kleptocrats. Evolve or perish, grow up or die. I don't know. I'd like to have my fingers crossed. If he can get away from infinite growth and that and help break the human races, I'd make him a saint. But we don't know what he's going to do, what we're going to watch. But congratulations, Vladimir. We had some amazing good press. I did, me personally, Mike Rupert. I mean, wow, the Press Democrat, my local paper here in Santa Rosa, did a feature on me in yesterday's edition with this great color photograph. We've had it up on the World News Desk at CollapseNet. But in like 35 years, it's like the most fair, respectful piece of journalism about me that I've seen yet. I mean, the story opened for A Prophet of Doom, which refers to my History Channel special last year. Michael Rupert looked remarkably cheery last week, surveying the vegetable plots and chicken coops in his large sloping backyard in Grayton Hills. Nearly a year after moving to Sonoma County, the Southern California transplant says he's so delighted by his new environs he has to pinch himself. That's true. But even in the sunny glow of the warm February afternoon, Rupert's mind is never far from the catastrophe he sees looming. Quote, "A tsunami is coming," he said. "Those of us who built on high ground hope we built high enough." That was a pretty good line, yeah. But the story went on, and as most of you know, Transition U.S. is headquartered here, as is Post Carbon Institute, as are all these wonderful people and things helping us to come to grips with this tsunami. They got a quote from the Post Carbon Institute, my good friends, Richard Heinberg over there, and you know they've just been at this for so long, but they quoted Post Carbon as saying, "Michael has proved to be very prescient, and he's a friend and peer of the Post Carbon Institute," said Todd Brilliant, spokesman for the Santa Rosa-based group. And I say, as I say that, I look up at this picture of Commander Dick Marcinko, which is up to the right of my desk here, and I read what he wrote to me in the autograph on the picture: "United we fight." Goddamn right. That's what's happening. We're fighting, and we're winning. There's a lot of very, very inspiring stuff going on. We're going to get to the juicy part later, but we have to solve a mystery. And here's the mystery. If you've been following it on CollapseNet, about 3-4 days ago, a report surfaced that a pipeline had been blown up in Saudi Arabia, that it was part of the Shiite rebellion against the Sunni monarchy. And Press TV, that's Iran's organ, went on the air and, you know, claimed that that a pipeline had been destroyed. Now, as I'm going through the stories, I find the location of where these blasts occur, and I went, oh, my God, because the blast occurred in what is the aorta of global oil production. All of Saudi Arabia's 80 or 90% of Saudi Arabia's oil is produced in roughly 20% of the country that's all Shia. That's where the fields are. And all the pipelines from the major fields, from Ghawar and all the lesser fields around, all come to one collection point at a place called Abqaiq, Abquaiq. I remember. Well, let me do the other part of that. Now, some 20-some miles away is Saudi Arabia's only super tanker port, where all of the tankers from around the world coming line up to fill up. And it's the pipelines in between Abqaiq and Ras Tanura that carry about 6-7 million barrels of oil a day, roughly 9 or 10% of the world's daily consumption. It is by any means the aorta. So that being said, now we get into this very strange set of circumstances where we have Iran's Press TV claiming complete destruction of the pipeline, Saudi Arabia claiming that nothing happened at all, hoax, but then major publications and many regional sources, and I'm talking Barron's and, you know, Reuters and you know, they refer to blast and fire. Now, in journalism, you would say reported if you didn't know it happened, but, the, you know, the, so... those stories said fire, they said blast. The BBC refused to confirm or deny. It was a very unusual, you know, hole in a good story done by the BBC. And there are continuing confirmed reports that something did happen there. And we've just recently there in eastern Saudi Arabia had, for the first time, had Saudi citizens shooting back at Saudi security forces. So something did happen. We don't know what it is, and it's being kept a secret, and nobody seems to have the right idea. But my dear friend Matthew Simmons, rest in peace, Matt, and I spent a lot of time talking about it at the ASPO conference in Berlin in 2004, and over the years said his greatest fear, and we talked about this after his great book Twilight in the Desert came out, which just absolutely proved that Saudi Arabia is lying through their teeth about their oil reserves and their abilities. I mean, it's just, we know that. But this was Matt's worst-case scenario for terrorism for world energy, was for a strike at Abqaiq, Ras Tanura, or the pipes in between. He said that will turn the lights off immediately. Now, by my calculations, if it was complete destruction, they can't keep it hidden for any longer than about 6 days or so. That's just rough. If there was less than that, of course, depending upon the amount, but something did happen. But what that does, it tells us why oil prices are spiking. Now, there has been some let off in the rate of increase, but that's because, guess what? The global economy is just shutting down. So I've noticed some things. I wrote, as soon as I pieced this together, I wrote this story for CollapseNet, and I laid out this whole relationship. And less than 24 hours later, Press TV runs a video clip, which runs a news report, which we had on the CollapseNet website. You can still find it. That it's like I wrote the script for. They were almost quoting the stuff that I had said about 20 hours earlier. So when I say that the world comes to CollapseNet, it could be a coincidence, it could not. But you know what? You can call me a conspiracy theorist if I can call you a coincidence theorist. Thank you, John Judge. We're going to cover some old turf tonight. So we are being read, and we are having an amazing influence, and clearly the analysis we're doing there fits. And today, Robin Westenriff down under gave us a story that he put together, the Shiite rebellion in Saudi Arabia and oil, which continues to ask these important questions, but it has a great radio broadcast from Radio New Zealand, again saying the same thing I am. So whatever the hell is going on in Saudi Arabia, it's serious and it's big, and I don't think I'm going to have a good night's sleep until I know what it is. And you can bet when I figure it out, you'll be the first to know if you're on CollapseNet. Again, I want to say hi to all my Facebook friends tonight. Andrew Breitbart dropped dead. Golly, Sergeant Carter. You know, Andrew Breitbart was the lunatic who I actually played a clip of on the show. I think it was 2 weeks ago, perhaps three, who was just psychotically yelling at occupiers outside the conservative political CPAC, Conservative Political Action Committee. But he had been saying he was going to, around March 1st, he was going to release tapes that would absolutely destroy Barack Obama. And then he suddenly drops dead, 43 years old. Well, listen, let me tell you guys, yeah, it's murder. We don't have to play coy or politically correct about this. He was murdered. I remember back when Volume 2 of the CIA's Inspector General's report into allegations of CIA, I remember the title, CIA drug trafficking during the Contra era, was about to come out. Those were the hearings that followed the Gary Webb stories, where I had my confrontation with John Deutsch. There was continued vindication coming out about Gary's allegations, and right at the end, as just before the report was to be released, when they were arguing about it, three people dropped dead within about 4 days of each other. One was the chief of staff of the House Intelligence Committee, the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. I forget his name. He allegedly went to a motel with a shotgun and blew his brains out. And then was it Russ? One of Bill Clinton's sleazebag drug-dealing lawyers also dropped dead in Washington, D.C. And Congressman Julian Dixon of Los Angeles, an African-American on the committee, who was, I believe he was ranking. No, maybe. No, Harmon was ranking. Anyway, Julian Dixon, who was a pretty decent guy, dropped dead of a heart attack in his shower. All within 4 days of each other. I have seen this happen so many times to so many people in the last 35 years, some of whom, many of whom I knew. So, yeah, Andrew Breitbart was murdered. Get it. We live in Deadwood. Don't be shocked. You know, these people are killing things all over the place. And Ron Paul, ladies and gentlemen, just placed second in Washington. He beat Santorum. Don't see the headlines on that. We had one on Collapsnet because I made it up. I wrote it. And Ron Paul's delegates are actually kicking butt in Oklahoma. We have a must-see video up on Collapsnet now where it shows the absolute sleazy illegality trying to be used to muscle Paul delegates. And they fought back and they won. They won. Yeah. So there's a lot of good things happening tonight. We're going to talk, when we come back after the song, about Alex Jones. And I'm going to talk about some other deep and dark things. But for the song tonight, Carolyn Baker, I know, would approve of this. It's important to grieve the things that we're losing as the collapse of human industrial civilization proceeds. Grieving is a normal and a healthy activity. And I've been very aware on the World News Desk at CollapseNet that the airlines are going down very, very, very quickly. And I have said very clearly that I predict that by the end of 12, commercial air travel as we have known it will be a complete thing of the past. So I've been starting to grieve some of the places I may never get to see again, while holding in my heart the extreme gratitude I have for having seen as much as I have. One of the places that I will miss not going back to is Hawaii. And we have a great song tonight from Diane Patterson. We've had one of her songs here before, High Sierra Morning. She's been in Hawaii performing for a while. But as this song plays tonight, I'm thinking of Hawaii and some of the great times I had there. Here is Aloha.
Space that's aloha.
Diane Patterson. Diane with two N's, Patterson.org. Go find her. She's an amazing singer-songwriter who I met here in Sebastopol not too long ago. She's over in Hawaii now, I believe. She'll be sticking her head up soon, I hope. But she writes some great tunes, so go check her out. All right, now, Alex Jones. Well, let's start with the known sequence of events here. The known sequence of events is that recently, Anonymous hacked into the computer database of Stratfor, a global intelligence agency founded by a Zionist. I don't have his name in front of me, George something, I think. But very well documented that he is a Zionist. And for the benefit of all the non-Jews out there, I don't have to say this to the Jews. I'm not a Jew. But here's the point. Israel is a country. Judaism is a religion. Zionism is a political philosophy. People who would like to go attack Iran, stuff like that. And it turns up, Stratfor opens its doors in Austin, Texas in 1996. Coincidentally, that's when Alex Jones turns up. But what was disclosed in there was some documents, and it had a mission statement from Stratfor, which when you put it, and Jones was referred to in some of the emails, but which when you put it by what Alex Jones claims about his bullshit information, disinformation operation, is almost word for word identical. And this is not two sentences. This is like 10 paragraphs or with subtitles and bullets that line up, bullet points that line up perfectly. Now, a few days ago, we had this story on the World News Desk, truther.org. It was a truther website. I have no experience with it. Ran the story, and it was well evidenced. I don't care whether the site itself is credible or not, whether he talks about Martians. What a detective is trained to do is to pick out the provable truth, regardless of who says it, because the most common mistake people make when they're trying to make assessments of the world is if a crazy man comes running up to them on the street and said a house is on fire and people are inside, they won't go and look. A detective's obligation is to go and look, because the truth is what you're obliged to. And so his sourcing was good, and his conclusions were excellent. I don't know anything about it. It's irrelevant to me about the site. But apparently Alex Jones has canceled a speaking tour. And this is what I wrote on the World News Desk at Collapse Net. The report is credible and well-sourced. I have no experience with the publication. This looks readily confirmable also, and it is. I have been saying for years that Alex Jones was disinfo. I have said it on the radio, in speeches, and in public appearances. He has never challenged me. And Alex Jones, you lying son of a bitch, sue me, please. I have not seen confirmation of the Stratfor docs, but there are some amazing coincidences of timing with Stratfor and Jones. This is important because I know that his primary objective was to manipulate the presidential politics around Ron Paul and pull support away from the wilderness and here at CollapseNet and on this show. Disinformation, in order to be effective, must be 90% accurate. Alex Jones has stolen, taken credit for, or parroted much of my work while always insisting that there has been endless abiotic oil, among other ridiculous things like endless FEMA concentration camps. Now, here's the point. What you want to understand with this is the amount of money that has gone into Stratfor's clients include Coca-Cola, all the worst. But this is the way disinformation works. Alex Jones has been noise to keep people from hearing the people who have been telling the truth, namely the peak oil movement, namely me. Alex Jones did not found 9/11. He's taken credit for a lot of my work. I have caught him falsifying stories, and I so want him to sue me over that. And he did something kind of brutal and unspeakable, as far as I'm concerned, to the family of my friend Gary Webb after Gary committed suicide. But look at how effective he's been. Now, this is directly to Alex Jones, if you're out there listening. You lying sack of you-know-what. It could be just a coincidence that these stories happened, but on the other hand, it could also be that since I have clearly been an open advocate of Anonymous, and thanks to WikiLeaks also for participating in this, since I am an occupier, since I have been attacking you for a long time, hoping and longing for the day when I would see your head on a pike outside the Tower of London, that all this stuff is coming down on your head now. It all could just be a coincidence, Alex. But around the world, a war is being fought. It's being fought by Anonymous. It's being fought by occupiers. It's being fought by people, men and women of honor around the world who are tired of the bullshit, and we are scoring blows all over the place. So, Alex, enjoy your ride down, buddy, because when your noise is gone, and I said this clearly this week on Facebook and on Collapse Net, for those who really want to know what happened on 9/11 and who really started the movement, there were four of us. It was me, Michelle Chosadowski, who's been a guest on this show, Dan Hopsicker, who did amazing, just amazing reporting on the flight school training down in Florida, and Paul Thompson. And we have the case, and I'll say this to the whole world right now, could be a coincidence that Iran's out there and our words seem to be the same, but for all of you heavyweights out there, for all you people in government out there, if anybody's ever really serious about 9/11, just pick up Crossing the Rubicon and start there. All right, I think it's about time for a station break, because when we come back, oh, I have to tell you about Wayne Madsen real quick. Wayne Madsen showed up in this Foghorn Leghorn tape Alex Jones was doing. Yeah, well, I mean, well, the Frag Babbitts is connected to the, and you know what I'm saying, you know, sleight of hand. Wayne Madsen, I published you a few times at From the Wilderness. You were a decent guy, but you have gone way the fuck downhill in the trash. Pardon me, I'm cussing tonight. It's time for a station break. I'm going to collect myself, and then we're going to talk about Special Forces, sarin gas, and Laos. Welcome back to a nightclub at the end of the world. I'm Mike Rupert. Now for the last part of the show, that the song was No Reason to Believe. No, excuse me, One Good Reason by Doug Lewis and all of us at New White Trash. And miss those guys, all of them. Okay, now, what are the three things that Alex Jones fundamentally disagrees about that makes him so dangerous? Well, first of all, he claims that the Earth is full of a creamy nougat center of abiotic oil that will replenish itself endlessly. Well, Alex, where is it, doofus? Alex Jones believes in infinite growth. Doesn't see any problem with growth. We do. And Alex Jones doesn't believe there's any such thing as climate change. So what does that tell you? Disinformation, in order to be effective, has to be 90% accurate. And this is a class act, a class example. He is no class act. A classic example of how effective the techniques which governments have perfected over centuries to control people's thoughts and minds have worked. But now going back to peak oil. Now peak oil, the world's being beat over the head with peak oil right now. The evidence is abundant. It's everywhere. It's undeniable. and yet the mainstream media is going to some of the most absurd lengths to lie about peak oil. And one of my favorite culprit here is CNN. They're just despicable, and CNN is just so easy to look through and see. You gag when you I don't watch them anymore. I look at their stories, you know, but it is truly like watching a play from Dante's Seventh Circle or something. But let's talk about CNN. In 1998, a huge controversy broke, a major story broke out of CNN, called Tailwind. Excuse me. And two producers, outstanding journalists, April Oliver and Jack Smith, got on this story, and they rounded up Peter Arnett. Remember that British guy from Gulf One? They went down, and the story was about sarin gas, a poison gas, being dispensed in Laos, roughly, I think it was 1968, to kill American POWs who were defectors. It was a top priority of special forces to kill POWs and defectors in the Vietnam War. And they had this story nailed. And this went to a guy named Johnny Singlaub, who had been commander of MACV SOG and Green Beret, and you know, all the guys we came to know and love during Iran-Contra, like Heini Aderholt, Richard Secord, Ted Shackley, you know, all of that crew. CNN broke the story, and it was ravaging the world. But then, like, I think it was 48 hours later, all of a sudden CNN retracted the story, and they fired April Oliver and Jack Smith, and they engaged in all kinds of stuff to shut them up. Now, what had happened was that Henry Kissinger had picked up the phone. I think Ted Turner still owned it at the time. And said, if you want your stock to be worth anything in the morning, you will kill that story and take it back, click, something like that. And that's exactly what the cowards at CNN did. Well, it was a big controversy for a while. And I had just founded From the Wilderness, and I was on top of this like you know what, right after it happened. And met with Oliver at Smith, and I got deeply involved in the case. And then now the outraged John Singlaub and all these other people were countersuing CNN for tens of millions of dollars, and they were personally going after April and Jack. And it went all the way to depositions. And Admiral Thomas Moore, who had been the chief of staff, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, in 68, gave his deposition. It was a six-hour deposition. It's still on the From the Wilderness website. You can find all these stories if you go to fromthewilderness.com and you enter Tailwind or Sarin Gas. It's kind of a weak search engine. We're going to try to work to fix that, but you'll find it. It's there. And six-hour deposition, this amazingly honorable admiral, fought tooth and nail for his side, and you could tell this was a really sharp guy. I mean, 600, 900, whatever pages into this deposition, he's still on. But what happened is, they had evidence that broke the admiral down, because he admitted at the end of the deposition that a bunch of Yard tribesmen, Hmong people, died because they were given gas masks when the planes flew over dispensing sarin, but their faces were too small. In other words, April Oliver and Jack Smith were telling the truth the whole time, and CNN committed a felony, a capital crime in terms of journalism, to take a good story, say it was false, and punish the reporters. And I can prove this. It's on the From the Wilderness website. So maybe, ladies and gentlemen, it's a coincidence that I'm, you know, deeply involved with Occupy and support Anonymous, and I'm on the side of the 99%. And maybe it's a coincidence that all that happened and Alex Jones got attacked by Anonymous. But CNN, I want you to know something. I'm coming for you. The lying that is going on in the mainstream media now is criminal. It is atrocious. It's laughable. It's despicable. So fair warning, CNN. This is a war, and it's being fought. And our side is winning. And everybody listening needs to decide what side they're going to be on. That was a very sad story. The sarin gas was dispensed out of A1E Sky Raiders based at Nak Horn Phnom Air Base, NKP, in Thailand. And all the old CIA hands who are listening tonight are the green beanies. This was where I met a great many of the Green Beret Special Forces guys that I've met over the course of a lifetime. I had met Colonel Bo Greitz, much underappreciated and underrecognized hero. Man, Bo, a lot of what you said is coming true. Back in 1992, he had been Green Beret commander in Vietnam, and Christ, he had more decorations than anything I've ever seen in my life. I met Bo in 92. I was married when I got married once. I got married in 1994. I was married at the home of Mrs. Francis Gary Powers. Now, only the oldest are going to remember that name. He had Gary Powers, Frank Powers, actually, that's what he really went by. Was a U-2 pilot shot down over Russia on May Day of 1960. He was a CIA pilot with a CIA op, and I was married at his widow's house in Sherman Oaks. And so, anyway, but as I was going through the tailwind stuff, a lot of guys who had served with 5th Special Forces really started to turn up, and I met some great people. Captain John McCarthy, who was set up for a murder he didn't commit. Jim McKeown, I met a lot of guys, and they turned up, and it was where I began to develop a very deep appreciation for my green beanies, as I learned to call them from my mentor, a retired warrant officer four from CID. But to all my warrior brothers out there now, I know you hear the tone in my voice, and I know you hear what I'm saying. It is time to find ways to press the enemy on all fronts. These lunatics are destroying everything, and they are absolutely and totally incompetent. No, I don't think there's going to be an attack on Iran. I'm still more worried now about the South China Sea, which is a separate kettle of worms. But what I'm absolutely most concerned about is oil prices and finding out what the hell is going on in Saudi Arabia. And I'm really perplexed as to why Press TV keeps taking their stories. I mean, it could be a coincidence, but, you know, what the heck. I have an email tonight I want to read from my really good friend Lee Deathcare Nelson, a.k.a. Windermere Assassin, who was all over Facebook, collapsed everywhere, and he was deeply involved in Occupy London. And this was... This is an email he just sent me before the show tonight, and it's about UK kids feeling the brunt, and this is really touching, and I'd like to read this. It is a sign of collapse, so bear witness. And another one, another stabbing on the streets of the UK, now an almost daily occurrence. Come on, kids, stop it. You're wasting your lives and energy as you battle each other for what? Money? Status? We want you on our side. Join us and help us to help you put a stop to this shit. Get involved with your local Occupy groups. Most of them are right here on Facebook. Join Anonymous or Zeitgeist and put your energy into something positive. There's a whole host of movements and groups that are fighting against the system to give you a better way of life. But we need your help and support. We need you all to stand united in a common cause rather than divided. Put down your knives and pick up a banner or a placard instead. Nothing will change to help your lives until you stand up and be counted in peaceful protest against the things that matter to you and to us all. Please post this message out to whoever you can. It's your duty as a world improver to help reach out, because the government will not do fuck to help our kids. They're incapable and condemning many more to die on our streets. So it's up to those of us that do care. There has been a heavy rash of youth on youth stabbings throughout Britain as this deteriorates, and he is so right. It is the wrong way to channel the energy for this. We do not. I don't know why, but I'm thinking about a line from Braveheart here or something. No, that's okay. I wanted to read that. So. Now, I've got some time now for the end of the show. I'll open it up for calls if you got anything you want to talk about. 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888, or email me directly at lifeboathour@collapsenet.com. Now, guys, here's something I want you all to remember. I kind of saved this for getting toward the end of the show. Remember this case. Kyobel versus Royal Dutch Petroleum, K-I-O-B-E-L. It is a case currently before the United States Supreme Court. It is a case in which what is on the line is corporate personhood. This arose out of a situation where Royal Dutch Shell hired teams of mercenaries to go in and kill people. And it's an issue about whether a corporation should be liable for that. It's sitting before the Supreme Court right now. Gee, now, I mentioned to you a while ago a mentor I had who was a warrant officer for, chief for at U.S. Army Criminal Intelligence. His name, Criminal Investigation. His name was Bill McCoy. He was about 6 foot six. He was a huge guy. He wore a beret, and he broke a major case, Vietnam Sergeant Major case, and he was the repository for, like, all the dirt from everywhere. And he talked with a big voice like this. He said, "This is McCoy. Don't shoot unless you get a headshot." Okay, Kiobel versus Royal Dutch Petroleum is a headshot to infinite growth. It is a headshot to the powers that be. It is a headshot to where the power is, and don't hear anybody talking about this. Now, the Supreme Court had it up, and they took up the case pretty quickly, and there was an indication that there's supposed to be a quick judgment in this case. Okay, let me make some things clearer to everybody out there. The Supreme Court is very aware of what goes on the streets, and this needs to be made an issue. It's a headshot. We don't expect to win, but getting this out there, and the Supreme Court needs to know that the people are very aware of what the real issues are, because if the Supreme Court isn't going to be aware, then the rest of the country is going to become aware. I've lived a long life. I've read a lot of cases, this is the one. But they come and they go. That's a unifier. We have to end corporate personhood, and I hope we get to that demand along with ending compound interest, fractional reserve banking, and fiat currency pretty darn quick. Because things are getting real sporty out here. And yeah, my blood's up. My blood is absolutely 100% ready for a fight, because what happens when I look around, and you'll see this on CollapseNet now all the time, you will see that people are fighting and winning. And one of the best ways to fight and win now is to move as quickly as you possibly can into System D economy. It's happening all over the world. We've had stories, you got to thank CollapseNet right now. We are proving ourselves to be utterly indispensable out there. We still need your memberships. We need your support. But we're hanging in there through these very tough times, and we're doing the deed for you. So give us some backup too. But you'll see this all the time, man. People are fighting in so many ways. But System D is getting outside the box of the formal economy as fast as you can. That's the only way you're not going to be taken down with the ship when it sinks. And System D is exploding all over the world. The whole world, in one way or another, is going System D, whether it's Iran figuring out all whatever ways it needs to sell its oil without trading in dollars, or a large portion of the U.S. economy now is completely off the books. And this is the shift of the paradigm, and the sooner all of us can start learning how to swim in those waters, the better off we'll all be. So as I'm looking ahead now for the week. Oh, you want to know what else is cool? As a result of the great article that appeared in the Press Democrat here, I've been invited to speak at the Rotary Club. Oh, my God. Mike Rupert goes mainstream. I'm happy to speak, especially to my neighbors here where I live. And that's a great thing, too, that I can report on here from my local on-the-ground report here in Sebastopol, is that I'm an active member of the Grange, and the Sebastopol Grange is just doing all kinds of wonderful things to help speed the learning and organization, to make the connections, the networking, the weaving of the web that we are all going to need in very short order. And it's just so encouraging to see that. But now to talk to the Rotary. And wherever you are, if you're in any of these organizations, I recommend anybody who has a local Grange join that. Rotary, wherever, put this stuff on the table. Enough is enough. And I'll finish with some Ron Paul stuff tonight. I heard Gary talking in the last show about, you know, these liberal troll lefty idiots who want to shoot Ron down over things. I thought Gary handled that pretty well. That's pretty much the way I feel. I will not tolerate any allegations that Ron Paul is racist. One of the first things that he will do, elected, and aside from giving us back our Bill of Rights, which all the brain dead lefty liberals don't seem to miss much, of course, you know, it hampers their ability to exercise tyranny too. Calling Ron Paul racist, one of the first things he's going to do is to end the war on drugs. Well, what have I been? What started me? You know, the war on drugs. One of the best lines I ever heard about it was retired San Jose Chief Joe McNamara in L.A. talking once. And he said, you know, when Richard Nixon started the war on drugs in 1972, the annual budget was $20 million. Today, the budget for the war on drugs is $20 billion a year, and yet there are more drugs in the country. They are of better quality, and they are less expensive than they were in 1972. So Ron Paul's going to end that madness. Well, one of the first things he's going to do is he's going to release nonviolent drug offenders, about 2 million of which in this country are black. Nonviolent drug offenders, no drug conspiracy, churn the system. Now, if he's going to let 2 million black people out of prison, how do you call that racist? Common sense here, people. He has given some of the most amazing speeches lately. There was a speech that was as important as Abraham Lincoln earlier in the week. He's on fire. The mainstream isn't covering it. But if you get your priorities straight, like we need the Constitution, we need our rights, we have to stop spending, we have to bring the troops home. There is no debate about this. None. So whatever knee-jerk reaction you've been programmed with, if you want us to have any chance to deal with collapse, that's why we need Ron Paul, because what he will do monetarily and economically and also by cutting away layers and acres of federal bureaucracies, he will liberate the localities to take care of themselves, whether it be having our own raw milk, growing our own food, or anything that we need to do. He will free us from that prison that is choking us now. And my friend James Stewart, who runs Rossum Foods in Venice, I was a member there before I moved up here. Great food. I mean, totally organic, just amazing stuff there. Was arrested on $1 million warrant for selling raw milk. It's time to gear up, people. Just gear up. We might be running for our lives, or we might be attacking or something, but the time of sitting and talking is over. And gas prices, I'm sure, are going to make that very clear to us next week. Now, again, bear in mind the world economic activity is measured by the Baltic Dry Index, and all of these that we bring you on CollapseNet is collapsing at an amazing rate. And as it collapses, the demand for oil collapses. There's like a 96% correlation between that. Funny. So that's what's taking some of the pressure off. But if, again, there has been an attack on the pipeline between Upcake and Ras Tanura, we will know by the end of next week. But gas prices are at all-time highs. They're still going up. And the rivets are starting to pop out of the bulkheads, I guess is a good way to put it right now. There's a lot of really, really sleazy people out there who have done well in the old paradigm, whether it be CNN or Alex Jones or Amy Goodman, who was the Alex Jones of the left, and we'll do that some other time. But one of the best lines that I think that I have heard, and it becomes ever more important, I think, as the situation becomes more sporting, is we do not forgive and we do not forget. Because if we forgive and if we forget, then these same people who created this situation and did so much harm in doing that will be free to continue doing that. That's not going to be possible. So I want the government and I want the media and I want everybody out there who thinks that they're the powers that be afraid. This isn't my uprising. I'm just on a surfboard. I happen to be near the good part of the wave. But I'm telling you, we are coming for the powers that be one way or another, because you are leaving us no choice. You are killing us. You are starving us. Greece is destroyed. The whole world's falling apart. We got nothing to lose. And we have a real tactical advantage because we tell the truth. And it's the most energy-efficient way there is to operate out there. It is all about honor, and we are going to discover that in the next paradigm. Okay, guys, that was a long rant for me tonight, but I'll tell you, I feel a lot better. We will be back with you next Sunday. Haven't got a guest lined up yet, but who knows? The week is young. Take care. We'll see you here on the Lifeboat Hour.